Everybody, welcome back. This is Southgate News Podcast, Episode 5. We are recording on Wednesday, November 13th, 2024, because we had to skip last week, so our apologies. I did put out a short little, hey, no show, apologies. We are busier than a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm sure people were absolutely
They were devastated. They were devastated. They were bitching and griping on X.
Yeah, I saw it trending. There was a hashtag.
Blue Sky, Threads, Facebook, TikTok, everything. YouTube.
Truth Social?
Truth Social.
Is that still a thing?
Yeah, for now. But anyway, yeah.
Did you mention Blue Sky?
I did.
Okay.
I did. Believe it or not, I mean, I've had an account not for a long time on Blue Sky, but I've been listening to some podcasts earlier this week, and apparently, this isn't even in our show notes, but there's been a deluge of new people going over to Blue Sky.
Just saw a tweet showing that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I forget it. So many hundreds of thousands of people or something that have gone over.
More than that.
Is it more than that now?
Yeah.
So I actually went and logged in because I had forgotten what my damn handle was. So I was like, have I ever actually signed up for Blue Sky? So I tried to go sign up, and it's like, we're sorry, but that email address is already in use. I'm like, huzzah, let me try to log in then.
Yeah, this has two images. One says Blue Sky is currently the number one free app on top charts.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter's or X is no longer in the top 25.
Thank God.
And then somebody else said 90 days ago, Blue Sky had 6.18 million users. 30 days ago, Blue Sky had 10.85 million users. And whatever day this was, tomorrow, Blue Sky will have 15 million users.
Wow. That's
this
impressive.
Is from somebody called Jazz.
Okay. You know.
Is he like one of the founders or something? Because it says, this is absolutely wild. Thanks for believing in us, y'all.
I'm going to say he's got some connection to it. All I know is Jack Dorsey originally was the force behind it. Some have said that he was either kicked out or he left. I don't know. But
Blue Sky?
Yeah. Because Jack Dorsey is the one.
How do you get kicked? How do you get shunned from Twitter after it's purchased? And then this one that you wanted to start for other reasons, you get ousted from that.
I don't know. I mean,
I'm telling you,
he owns Square. He owns Square, or he did. I'm presuming he still owns Square. He had Twitter.
Yeah.
Then he was. I thought he was actually the guy that I thought he was like the CEO of Blue Sky, but apparently he was never CEO. But he was instrumental in getting it started. And then there's somebody else that's actually running it. And then somewhere, I found all this out yesterday. Philip DeFranco has started doing a live stream in the mornings on his Twitch channel as an experiment, just to talk about news and stuff like that. And I think it was this morning, or might have been yesterday morning. I can't remember. Anyway, Blue Sky came up and it was like, who is Blue Sky? And we're all in the chat going, Jack Dorsey. And then somebody started popping in and go, no, he hasn't had anything to do with it for a couple of years now. And I'm like, well, that's news to me. Hmm. But it looks like Twitter. It looks like the early version of Twitter to me. I don't have the app. I just go to the web.
Yeah.
And so I made my first post on there today.
Well, it appears that from what people are saying, it looks like the politically left-leaning folks are leaving X and going to Blue Sky. So now we have another thing to divide us.
Yeah. Well, if you're a Republican, you go to X. If you're a Democrat, you go to Blue Sky. Where do you go if you're an independent? Because honestly, Threads was actually the left-leaning. But there's a lot of people that are talking about how Threads is kind of a shit show right now, too, because something about mute words not working and some of the controls.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still on Twitter.
I mean, my account's still there.
I mean, there's plenty of activity on both sides.
You know what's interesting? Us right here, we're like, we don't want to get political.
Right.
But ATP, another tech podcast, a huge one, they had an entire 30-minute segment in their one of their episodes, I think either before or after the election, might have been before the election. And that's the thing that I've noticed about a lot of independent tech creators, mm-hmm. people that are in technology and create content like podcasts and YouTube videos, they lean left. There's very few of us that lean right. Just from, and I don't take that from me as the God's honest truth. I don't know.
It's
I'm just saying,
feeling, yeah. It's just a trend you've kind of get a sense of. Yeah,
I've noticed. Of the tech podcasts that I listen to, they all lean left. These guys, I don't know how many episodes, they make money off of this podcast, but they were raging against the machine that is the Republican Party.
Really?
For like 20 or 30 minutes. And then they were like, okay, that's that. We'll move on to tech news. And I was like, holy shit. That's, and I mean, GOG, they don't pull any punches there either. They'll basically tell you that, you know, Trump is the devil incarnate kind of thing. They don't shy away from it. And I was like, but then you've got your other podcasts, like from your other networks, like Relay.fm, you got your Twit network and all of that. They try to stay in the lane.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which way is better. I mean, I don't think people would want to listen to us just carry on for an hour about politics.
Yeah.
Even if it, I guess what I'm saying is when it connects directly to technology, I think it's okay to get a little into the weeds on that.
Right. When it does affect what we do, mm-hmm. how we do it, mm-hmm. how our customers may be affected in from the technology perspective.
Exactly.
And what certain policies might make things harder to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get having to sit here and complain for 45 minutes about it.
Or talk about Trump's latest cabinet picks today, which are bonkers. But anyway.
Hey, look.
I'm now just to the point where I want my popcorn. I'm just sitting back here.
Yeah.
Just watching.
The simulation is optimized for entertainment.
Yeah, apparently.
That's all it is.
It's wild.
And I really don't. I think Elon has, I won't say pure motives, mm-hmm. but there is clearly government waste.
No doubt. There always has been.
It is gigantic.
But he ain't the guy to do it. That's my problem. He doesn't
pay his
own damn bills.
Here we
as
are
it
yelling
is.
At each other.
I know.
Well, why hasn't anyone been chosen to do that job?
That is a fair question.
Because nobody wants to do it.
That's a fair question.
Let's see what happens.
I mean, I'm fine. I want to see what happens. Now, Vivek Swamy or whatever the hell. I mean, come on. But anyway, you know, they're paired together now to be part of Doge.
Some folks brought up, like, oh, yeah, the Department of Government Efficiency is an example because it's taken two people to do whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Speaking about losing our fucking minds, we had a problem with True Vista again.
We did.
2 weeks ago because we had to skip a week, but that mm-hmm. was over 2 weeks ago. Thankfully, it didn't last as long. It was the same problem, and the fix was like
these assholes tried that upgrade again.
Yep, they did.
And they hit the button and went home again.
And they rolled back again. But there's some good news out of all of this now. The next time it happens, I won't know it directly.
Yeah.
Because I'm now on fiber.
I might know it, but it depends on whether my RMM is going to mm-hmm. alert me in time.
I actually reached out to Walt the other day because there used to be some monitoring software that we used at CityNet to monitor all of the devices, and it would actually send text out.
Yeah.
And I was like, I had to ask him what it was, and I don't know what he told me because in my transition to my new swanky iPhone 16 Pro, Signal was a little bitch and was going to take, because it does it over Bluetooth, it was trying to transfer all of my history from my old phone to my new phone, and it was going to take like 3 hours to do it. And I finally gave up and said, don't worry about the history. So I don't have any history here. And then I had to relink all of the computers that I have Signal running on, and I have now lost the thread that I had with him, and he told me what it was. So the whole point that I was making here is I was going to look and try to run something like that to go against the one or two clients that I know will be affected mm-hmm. if they try this again and it fails. But because, yeah, like I said, it won't affect me now for whatever the reason is, whatever subnet that our ad trends are on, because we get a completely different IP address and a completely different range than what we got before. They're not affected. So I don't know. I did talk to my contact there, and supposedly they're going to make some serious changes. Apparently the sales manager for the state of Georgia is not very happy. And it was even pointed out that I'm the only reason that they even knew that it was happening again, because I'm the one that notified my contact. Their doc didn't even know.
So what happens when a customer calls? That shit just...
I'm up so early, I'm the first one.
Oh, I just figured maybe they're...
Not answering the
customer
phone?
Customer incoming calls go to DevNull.
I mean, up until about 8 o'clock, probably, because they don't have a 24/7 knock. That's what I scratched my head on that one. I said, look, the size that y'all are, I said, I understood the reason why we didn't have a 24/7 knock. I mean, we were only serving
municipal area.
We were only 3,500 customers.
Yeah.
But you guys are serving a lot larger area. Why isn't your knock 24/7? I don't know.
Oh, you had on call guy.
Yeah, I had an on call guy until about 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
And right. But then we also had those monitoring systems where Walt and Chad and myself would get notified, you know, via paging or whatever. So it wasn't like that we weren't aware of some major catastrophe happened. We did.
Yeah.
Apparently they don't even have that. So anyway, we shall see. But
well, they lost one over it.
Did they?
Yeah. My insurance agent.
Ah, well, I went to Clearwave to get, did he ever give you a quote?
He did. It got buried, and I found it today, and I was actually about to pull it up.
Yeah. I got his first quote, and I went, because I think this is one I shared with you.
Yeah.
And
kind of a ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I think you pointed out too, why is it dedicated?
Yeah.
So I went back to him and I said, dude, I'm looking at you guys in two different locations. I need GPON. I don't need dedicated fiber. He came back. It was a couple of days later. He came back with a better quote. I'll share it with you later. But
more palatable?
Yes. Cheaper than currently what they have? No, but much faster.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Fast.
I mean, he's quoting a gig. Each location that I'm talking about currently only has 200 by 200. And we're only talking about going up by maybe $150. $200 maybe. So I think it's something that I need to entertain. But while you're looking that up, what's the weirdest thing that you've ever found that has caused a paper jam in a printer?
Ooh, there aren't many. I mean, label paper, the peel-off stickers.
Yeah.
Wrapped all the way around
the
roller. Yeah, that's about it.
So I had a situation. I was called in because the main printer was... It's a Brother L5800DW, and it was doing some weird crap. It was just constantly rebooting. And this happened over, it was one of those situations where the Friday it was working fine. The Monday it started doing this. It was just like it every 10 to 15, 20 seconds, it would just restart. You can never send a print job to it. And I was like, okay, so I start digging into it. Now, this is not the one that jammed. I'm getting to that. I'm building up the foundation of the story, and you'll find this probably a little odd too. So the printer was on Wi-Fi. So I took it off Wi-Fi. It stopped restarting. I was like, now that's interesting. So it also had a long USB cable. So I don't know why we weren't using that, but anyway, I made sure that it could detect, and then I would send a print job to it. The display on the printer would say receiving data, and I could have literally gone and taken a dump and come back, and it would have still been receiving data. So I was like, okay, next ditch effort. I've got a network connection here. So I connected up the network cable, and as soon as it started seeing network data, it started restarting every 20 seconds. So I was like, I have seen this, something very similar to this before. And I think it's a hosed up interface card. And of course, I open up a ticket with Brother and I'm like, hey guys, it's doing this. They get back to me about 3 or 4 days later and they're like, well, this is such a such a complicated issue for us to troubleshoot. We need to schedule a time to get you on the phone. And I'm like, bitch, please. I just want to know where to buy the interface board from. I can change it out.
Yeah.
So in the interim, there's an old Lexmark T644. This place used to use these printers several years ago. We still got them around. It'd been sitting there. So I was like, let's see if we can use this. So I fire it up. I make sure that the drivers are updated. I send a print job to it, and it immediately jams. And I'm like, okay, this thing probably hasn't run in like 2 years easily. So once I finally figure out all the access points in this printer, I pull the paper out. I'm like, yeah, it crumpled up. And I'm looking in there, and I'm like, is that a label? What is this? So I reach in and I pull it out because it had this big clumpy thing, but not like, it was kind of flat, but it had like this little tether to it. So I reach in and I start to pull it out. Now keep in mind, this is a like a 30-year-old woman standing behind me.
Mm-hmm.
She's watching what I'm doing. I pull it out, and as soon as I get it out to where we both can see it, I go, ah! And I drop it. It was a dead mouse.
Why did you drop a dead mouse?
Somebody cue the music. I have never seen that, but the mouse had gotten in there and died, and he was flat. He was flat. Hmm. He was dehydrated. He was desiccated. He was a vampire mouse. So I was like, okay, well, now that the mouse is out, let's see if we can actually make this thing print. And it printed about 2 sheets, and then it jammed again. And not only that, but it had a streak on both sides of the paper where the mouse had been of toner. And I'm like, oh, no, this thing, I do not clean printers. That's just one thing. I'm like, no, not doing it. And I'm like, well, this isn't going to work. So long story short, we had an old retired, I forget the model, but it was a color brother upstairs. I had to get one of the tall young guys to actually get it off the top rack for me because that son of a bitch was like 25 or 30 pounds. And that was over my head. And I'm like, I'm not throwing my back out to get you a printer. So we got it hooked up. It works. It's slower than dog shit, but it works. But yeah, years ago, I had a field mouse get into a computer case and urinate all over the motherboard and kill the computer. And that was actually my cousin's computer, but I've never had a dead mouse get caught in a printer before. Or I'm going to presume he was alive when he got caught in the printer and got killed by the printer.
I did have a user tell me that they found a cooked lizard in their printer.
Well, that fuser does get hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a...
Poor guy.
Oh, and my last thing to get caught up on is that same client is doing some kind of new initiative, and I had the fun of setting up 12 new iPads, getting them fully updated, putting them in the cases that I bought for them.
Yeah, we're at that level where it's not just one.
Yeah.
But it's not quite enough to go and figure out a mass deployment method.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just 12.
Yeah.
12 one-offs.
Yeah, I did them four at a time. I had them sitting up over there on my workbench. And I joked with the family. I was like, because they were sitting up, because it's the kind of cases that have the hand strap that you can rotate it around. It's got the kickstand.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were sitting up like that. And every time something would come up where I'd have to hit buttons, it'd be like, doom, 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 doom. And I started doing like the Mario theme as I was doing it. And so it was interesting. I spent about 5 hours Saturday doing the first nine, and then I did the other three Monday morning. So what have you been up to? Did you go, since Veterans Day was Monday, did your dude call you up? Did y'all go anywhere?
We would have, but he decided to buy a piece of shit 36-year-old Ford Ranger. And so we went to the middle of Georgia,
mm-hmm.
down a dirt road to a place that had every farm animal you can name. There were three turkeys, three guineas, a goat, two pigs, chickens, maybe a sheep. I didn't get that clear. And there was a dog in there with the goat.
It was a land-bound Noah's Ark.
I guess. It was entertaining.
Yeah.
So no, we didn't find time to go cruise for free food.
Yeah.
I never liked doing that anyway, but that's just his hobby.
He explicitly calls me,
hey, you ready to go make the rounds?
Mm-hmm. I thought of you Monday because of our previous conversation about that. I was like, I wonder if Ben's making the rounds.
Yeah. Yeah, I served in the military. I don't wear that shit on my sleeve.
Yeah, I know. So, AI, you got here more AI models. Yeah, what is this analysis paralysis thing?
Or security posture for clients.
Oh.
They're, you know, we have a, like I said last time, we have a sales first industry.
Yeah.
Our vendors are sell. And I'm like, does it fucking work?
Mm-hmm.
Every EDR I've tried either can't be tuned or is too heavy, mm-hmm. or
same problem.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
but in order to try the one from my main vendor, I got to sign a 3-year contract or whatever.
Just like, to try it?
It's too complicated to set up a trial. And I'm like, well.
Well, then I'm not going to try it.
I'm going to do this other one, you know?
Jeez.
Because if I'm going to sign that contract, I've got to get my clients to sign.
Yeah.
Agreeing to pay for it before I buy it.
Exactly.
So, and it's just like, how do I ensure clients know that this is actually going to work?
Yeah.
I can't. So.
No, and I don't know about you, but I've got PCs that are still on these clients' networks that are circa 2014, 2015.
I don't have any. Well, I might have some that old because they'll drag one out of the closet every once in a while.
Yeah.
But, I do have a client who does that, but now I'm in the habit. When I replace a machine, that old one goes in the back of my truck when I leave.
Yeah. You're not putting it in the closet. It's not going to suddenly, getting a call one day and going.
I've been here 6 times for that machine. I finally replaced it. Yeah. I'm never coming back for that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, what all do I need to do? Who's got the best product? Does it work?
Have you ever tried?
Are clients comfortable with it?
Have you ever tried Huntress? I get emails almost 3-4 times a week from them. Is it any good?
It is. It is. The team there is great. It's as far as when I was using it, it's not a full EDR.
Okay.
It catches it and gives you remediation steps. I think there's a plan you can get now where some of the remediation is automated.
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't provide enough. I don't know. It didn't provide enough action. It was more of a reporting thing for me.
Yeah.
But it was good, and it was cheap.
Okay. I've never looked at the pricing, but I know that they've been hounding me for almost a year.
And they didn't require signing a contract.
Yeah,
right. I still get the weekly reports that say, oh, you don't have any endpoints.
I know Sentinel One has just like a reporting. You can enable it, and it just reports only. And I've told you, I said it was too heavy whenever I tried it.
Yeah.
The only reason why I tried it is because they integrated it. Enable bought the company, as far as I know. I think they bought the company back when they were SolarWinds, and then they became Enable. But they bought the company the Sentinel One company, and they integrated it into the RMM that I use, which is Enable's. So,
I think I was using SolarWinds just before they became Enable, and I think I've seen the Sentinel One table at an event since then. I don't know.
I still discover it on a couple of machines that it didn't get removed. It's not active.
Oh, I still have WebRoot agents out there. I'm just going to have to replace the machine.
Well, there's a tool to get the Sentinel One off, but most of the time you have to reboot the machine into safe mode.
Yeah.
Luckily, requires
a visit.
Well, no. Take Control will actually reboot a machine into safe mode. And,
can you control it while it's in safe mode?
Yep.
Oh.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. It'll do it. There's an option that says there's like an emergency reboot option that one I've had to use before. It's like you lose control of the machine and you just hit it. And I don't know what the hell it does, but you give it about 3 minutes and that machine is back accessible.
Hmm.
But yeah, there's a special restart, and one of the options is restart in safe mode, and it'll restart the machine in safe mode. And I've been able to run that tool that way to get the Sentinel-1 off. But that's what I was saying. It's so funny is when I discover it that it's on there, mm-hmm. it's not actually doing anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's just there. It's definitely not reporting back to my dashboard because I don't have that service.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, that's interesting. But, and the only reason why I thought of that is I come across a machine about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think. And I was like, why? Because I saw the icon, the little Sentinel-1 icon down on the tray. And I'm like, why is that still there? And usually what it is a machine that has been off for a little while. And then we put it back on the net, or they're like, yeah, we need to start using this machine again.
Yeah.
And it hasn't quite timed out off of my dashboard because mm-hmm. I do have like 180 days or something. If it doesn't see a machine, it'll just drop it. And I'm like, okay, that's funny as hell. But yeah, I know we talk about this to death. I don't know what to do because, you know.
From a compliance standpoint, I think that if a customer were to file a cybersecurity insurance claim,
yeah,
the insurance company is going to come back and go, well, what measures did you take to prevent this? And I want to be able to go, we did all of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you ever filled out one of those questionnaires for your client?
Yeah. Well, I was gathering answers and the client filled it all in with clearly wrong answers.
Mm.
But it hasn't come back from underwriting, so they might have just accepted it so they can take his money and never approve a claim.
I've done it twice, and it was actually a car dealership, ironically, and I've done it twice. And one of the options is they have a whole section about EDR.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, whenever I filled those out, I was like, we don't use EDR, but we're looking into it. And I figured what they would do is the rates would be higher if EDR was not an option. Now, I can tell you this, based on my personal opinion of looking at these questionnaires, no fucking IT person was brought in to write the questions on this damn questionnaire.
Yeah, the last one I looked at was not clear. How much excess network capacity do you have? Like, in what terms?
Yeah.
And the agent can't tell me.
Yeah.
And she sends questions to underwriting, and it's nothing.
I don't think they know what they're doing. I think somewhere along the line,
they're just taking money.
Yeah.
And figuring out later and then go, oh, you didn't have this.
Yeah.
I've asked them several times now, like, what standards are you going to put this against if he files a claim? I don't know. How do I know? What are we paying for? It's like, I have a car crash, you know, I get mm-hmm. T-boned at an intersection, mm-hmm. not even my fault. An insurance company comes back and says, you didn't check the air in all your tires, so we're not paying that claim. Yeah. Like, I didn't know I had to.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's now a standard.
Yeah.
Well, how am I supposed to know?
Exactly.
That's the reason we have insurance, to scare the shit out of you so you'll do the right thing. Well, we just need to know what that right thing is that we need to do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I'd love to know so I can convince the client to pay me to do those things.
You know, I would almost like, but then this could be gamed. You'd almost like for your cybersecurity companies, your insurance companies,
mm-hmm.
to actually say, okay, these are the ones we recommend, and this is the level that they need to be at. You know, there need to actually be some IT people in there that says, these are the only products that qualify for this insurance policy.
Or they need to meet this NIST standard.
Right, right.
And so there you go. I need to bring my network up to that standard mm-hmm. and have the proof that we're doing everything.
Yeah, because if you can do that, and then the client, and you have to tell the client, okay, for you to secure this policy, we've got to do these things, and it's going to cost this.
Mm-hmm.
Then if the client says, no, that's too much, you're off the hook.
Yeah.
You know, but if they're willing to pay for it and to do the right thing, then, you know, your ass is covered.
Or we could be able to say, well, your rate is this, and it'll be half of that if we do these few things.
Right, yeah.
And let them weigh it. But
why'd it get so hard?
I don't know.
Let AI handle it.
I'm ready to go cut grass. Go paint houses or something.
Hey, yeah, let's see. That'll be the R&A lawn service. Oh, so you still playing around with AI models?
I was, but then I got busy with, you know, work.
Yeah, real work.
Yeah, real work.
The kind that makes money.
I was sort of playing with Claude. I had the idea to build a chat bot to enter into our conversations on your chat server.
Oh, okay.
But
that'd be interesting.
I saw something else that was shiny.
Squirrel.
Yeah.
I do that.
Yeah. And I became a premium X user.
You what? You're paying
my horse is very high.
Wait a minute. You're paying the $8.99?
No, I paid
$8.99 a month or
I paid the annual thing.
Oh.
20% or so, maybe 40%. I don't know. I paid less than $200 for the year.
I'm not even going to ask why.
Grok.
Oh, God.
Access to Grok.
Okay.
It's another model I can play with.
Yes, I understand that. You know, here I am. I thought I was doing something great because I actually started paying for ChatGPT.
ChatGPT cost me more than X Premium, but I'm going to still use that, too.
Yeah, I did it because I got tired of the, hey, you just used up all of your ChatGPT 4.0. Yeah. You can have it again at 11 o'clock tonight.
Or you might have changed models and...
Well, it reverts back to 3.5. Mm. So I was like, you know what? I use this so much because I was playing the game of logging out of one account, logging into another. So, you know, because all you got to do is just keep logging in with different Gmail accounts or email accounts.
Yeah.
I was like, no. I'll do the right thing. I've cut this service off. I've cut this off and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'll just pay for it.
It turned out it saved me a lot of time. And I was like, that's worth $20 a month.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean,
especially now they have web searches.
Yeah.
You go, I have a question in plain English, and it'll search the web for me.
Matter of fact, we're going to talk about that later down in the show notes. So are you ready to get into the stories?
Yeah, I had one other thing. But
okay, go ahead.
No, well, I forgot what it was.
Oh, sorry. Well, if it comes back, just jump right in. All right, so we're a little late to the game on this simply because of the fact that we had to skip a week. But instead of Apple having, like, a big televised, I say televised because it's all pre-recorded now, which I prefer than the live shows. But anyway, opinions vary on that. They did these videos, I think it was like Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, where each day they introduced a new product around the M4. And so I've got a couple of articles in here, but basically I did a summary using ChatGPT. And it said, Apple's latest updates to its Mac lineup include the new 14 and 16-inch MacBook Pros, a 24-inch iMac, and a redesigned Mac Mini, all equipped with M4 processors and significant enhancements. So the MacBook Pro, available in 14 and 16-inch models. You've got the M4 Pro and the M4 Pro Max chips. They have Thunderbolt 5 ports. The base RAM has increased to 24 gigs for the Pro models and 16 gigs for the entry level. That's been a big thing, is the fact that they finally went from 8 gig on the base models to 16. They have a new space black color. I don't give a shit about the colors. Mm. I mean, I bought this one right here is an M2 13-inch. And it's got this right here is actually from, oh God, what's the name of the D-Brand. That's actually a D-Brand skin that's on this.
I don't know what D-Brand is.
They make skins and wraps for phones and consoles like PS5 and Xbox and all of that.
That's necessary.
So, yeah, I actually put one right here, and I just got basic black because I'm a basic bitch, apparently.
Well, they're all the same color on the inside.
Yeah, that's true. But you can literally get one that actually comes across here, and it looks like the inside of the computer. You can do a wrap like that for the phone, stuff like that. So anyway, 12 megapixel webcam, brighter nano texture displays, and they started shipping on November the 8th. Okay. I'm not in the, I don't need a new laptop. Do you? Would you be in the market for one of these?
When this battery dies,
yeah,
the clock loses it. So, I mean, I don't think that's something I can change.
No.
But I don't get enough out of this thing to buy another one.
Buy another one.
I think I paid $1,600 for this because I upgraded to 16 gigs of RAM.
Yep.
And maybe a little bit more storage. But honestly, I love how it types.
Oh, I love
it. It's not worth a new one.
I love these. You'll probably notice that when I go wireless keyboards, they're all chiclet.
Mm.
Because I have discovered as a touch typist,
mm-hmm.
because I am a trained touch typist, I can float across these keys faster than I can any other keyboard. And ever since I discovered the chiclet style, that's all I get now, is everything is chiclet.
Yeah, I can't do it. I mean, I use a traditional Lenovo keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And when it runs out, I get one of the 20 brand new ones I have upstairs, because some folks like to keep their keyboards.
I got keyboards and mice right there that are the Chinese brands that were coming with these refurb units.
Yeah.
And I'm like, those. I hate those too. But I wind up, for clients, I wind up buying a particular model of Logitech. It's a combo that comes with the mouse and the keyboard with one dongle.
Yeah,
it's about $29 or something. I forget the model, but
I think we've been using like the MK710.
Yeah, it's an
MK. Sounds about right.
It's an MK something. Yeah. Well, then they did the iMac, updated 24-inch M4 iMac, starts at $1,299, doubled the base RAM to 16 gig, introduced an 8-core CPU, GPU, with higher models offering a 10-core configuration, additional ports. Now they have USB-C charging. The webcam supports desk view, but the video camera is still 1080p. Who cares? And it started shipping on November 8th. Now, the one thing that I was interested in, even though I know I don't need this thing because I already have an M2 Pro Mac Mini sitting right over there, they introduced the redesigned Mac Mini that is just slightly bigger than the Apple TV. It starts at $599, 16 gigs of RAM. The M4 Pro model starts at $1,399. It gains front USB-C ports, headphone jack. There are no USB-A ports on this thing whatsoever. They have abandoned USB-A. So it's all
somebody.
Yeah. You got Ethernet, you got HDMI, and you got Thunderbolt ports. It also started shipping on November the 8th. I saw a video of, what's his name? Mr. Alex. Anyway, he does a lot of DaVinci videos. Mm-hmm. DaVinci is the video editing software that is put out by Blackmagic.
Mm-hmm.
There's a free version and there's a pro version. And the pro version is like $300. And if I did more video editing, I would actually own it. But the free version does what I need. He took the base model of the Mac Mini and put DaVinci 19 on it and just to run it through its paces. And he was very impressed at how the base model would just do 4K content, a mixture of all of the... One of the big things is like when you're scrubbing through, when you've got stuff on the timeline and you're scrubbing through.
Yeah.
If the machine won't scrub smoothly, that slows you down in the editing process, which is a problem I've had for years of other video editing software on like Windows, especially if you were pulling in MP4 content. It was just like, would chew on it. And it'd be like, I'm trying to get over here and I can't see the video to, you know, to actually preview. But anyway, that's what they announced. It was about 2 weeks ago or so because they did start shipping on November the 8th.
Oh, I saw a lot of butthurt about the power button being on the bottom.
I wish people would just shut the fuck up about the God blessed power button. There's nothing wrong with where it's at. Good grief.
I know. I was thinking, well, just don't buy it. If that's that big of a problem, just fuck off.
If you can't get your damn finger up under the corner, lift up this tiny little thing.
You got to think about the size of the American finger.
Oh, well, that's fair.
I think somebody's already printed a spring-loaded thing where you just press the whole machine down and it mashes the button.
Yeah.
And there was also some flack about the new Magic Mouse.
I didn't see that.
Anyway, USB-C charge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's wireless.
Well,
charge port is on the bottom.
It's been like that. That's not new. Yeah. But that's what they were making the comparison. And that's probably the reason why you saw it. They were making the comparison. Some folks were saying, well, it's kind of dumb for it to be on the bottom, but at least it's not as bad as the Magic Mouse where you have to plug it into the bottom of it. And that is a stupid design on the mouse.
Well, somebody did mention, like, it's USB-C. Charge it, go to lunch.
Yeah.
It's done. You're good for another how many weeks?
Yeah.
On one charge?
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
charges true. In a, what, 20 minutes, an hour maybe?
I don't understand why they didn't put it on the ass end, though. They could have easily moved it and put it on the ass end of it. So, because that's the complaint. It's like, if I need to charge it, you could put it on the bottom, on the ass end of it, and then I could still use it as a, quote, wired mouse.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I mean, like, if it's going to die on me, maybe... maybe it's not at 9 o'clock in the morning, but how long does it take to charge? I mean, pop it on there, let it charge for 10 minutes, and then use it until you can get the lunch, and then charge it again.
I don't know.
I don't have one of those.
I don't have any of those problems.
Well, I don't either, because I don't have a magic mouse. I do have wireless mice.
Yeah,
but they use traditional batteries.
Well, my Logitech charges at the port in the front. It's USB micro.
Mm, I hate micro. It used to be the standard.
I do too, but I mean, if everything goes to C, I'm good.
Yeah, that was one thing. Those iPads I was talking about, those are 10th generation of the 10.9, just the basic ones. Mm-hmm. That was nice, the fact that they were USB-C.
Yeah.
And I actually bought a couple of charging stations. That's one of them over there I got to send back. They're designed where you can actually set the stuff up on top of it, and you can get little 6-inch and plug in.
Mm-hmm.
That one actually has USB-C and USB-A on it. Problem ran into... so once you put those bastards in cases, they don't fit in the slots. So I recommended to my client, lay them around it and use the longer charging cables that actually came with the iPads. The point is, we need a centralized place for everybody to charge these up instead of there being... This is a car dealership that I'm talking about in the service department.
Mm.
So I know what will happen if they... well, this one was over here getting charged, and this one was over here getting charged. And I'm like, no, there's your centralized charging location. Go put them there.
Just design and 3D print a rack.
You know,
just
go
get a dish rack.
That'd be great if I had a 3D printer. Yeah,
well, design one and I'll print it.
That's right, you do
something
have
that big. It would only take about 4 or 5 days. No, go get a dish rack from Walmart. That's what you do.
Yeah.
Or TJ Maxx. I'm sure TJ Maxx has something.
Yeah, probably. Hacked robot vacuums across the U.S. started yelling slurs.
That sounds like fun.
It does. I've never heard of this. Ecovax?
I've seen the name.
Ecovax robot vacuums have become vulnerable to hacking, allowing intruders to control the devices and broadcast offensive slurs through their speakers. Okay, I have to stop. Why does a vacuum have a speaker?
I think to play tones. Like when it begins,
yeah,
it plays a tone. So I don't know. Maybe you know that it's about.
Does that require an actual speaker?
I mean,
how else do
anything
you make
with a cheap piezo speaker?
Yeah. Okay. Several U.S. owners, including Daniel Swinson, reported that their vacuums behaved oddly, and upon investigation, discovered strangers remotely accessing the live camera and speaker. It's got a camera. Is that how? Do they?
Some of them have the capability to map their environment.
Yeah.
And
I thought they did it with LiDAR, though.
Maybe they licensed some pure vision Tesla technology.
I was going to say, is this an Elon company?
Or it could just be for object avoidance.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Despite resetting his vacuum, Swinson's device began shouting racist obscenities. The incident underscores ongoing security concerns with IoT devices, particularly as many smart home products, including robot vacuums, lack robust security features.
IoT everywhere does.
Yeah, that's true. Because it's not necessarily IoT. We got another story down the list. Ecovax informed of this vulnerability in 2023, a delayed action, though they now plan a security update for November. So they were...
sorry, I have an Ecovax.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. We don't use it. I mean, it's been in the...
oh, okay.
We used it for a few months, and then I was like, the house too big.
Uh-huh.
This thing goes and gets stuck under the bed all the time somewhere. We have to manage it. You have to manage it like a toddler. Keep doors shut and all that.
If that's the case, I'm just going to vacuum.
Well, and it'll end up so far away and the battery dies, it can't make it back to the station. So we just kind of gave up on it. But it is an Ecovax. That's why I've heard of the name.
Okay. All right. So they were alerted of it in 2023, delayed action. Now they have a security update for November. Inadequate PIN validation and lack of secure server-side checks leave these devices vulnerable to even basic hacking techniques, highlighting the need for better security standards and consumer-grade smart home technology. No kidding.
That's why I created another SSID, another subnet that has no access to anything inside except each other.
There you go.
So all of the Echo devices, the thermostats, and I'm ashamed to say the washer and dryer.
I'm ashamed of you. Washer and dryer, please. Not the refrigerator.
It has Wi-Fi, but I didn't bother.
Okay.
What else? Well, that vacuum cleaner.
Now, you said Echo.
The Amazon devices.
Okay, so they do get out. They have to get out.
Yeah, they get out.
Okay.
They don't get in.
Gotcha. It's kind of like creating the, like some of the clients I have. I have the public network is actually, you know, it's definitely carved off and can't get into anything else.
Right.
It's just,
yeah.
And I lock those things down so much that I've learned some new tricks since then, but I've locked it down to where I block everything first and then outbound, I block everything first. I'm blocking outbound and then specifically allow certain ports, like being able to access websites and stuff like that. I had to do that because not long at this one particular client, not long after we went to got the public network up, and they wanted it to where as soon as, and we're using Ubiquiti. So as soon as someone uses the public Wi-Fi, it says, hey, go like the Facebook page, which, if you require that, by the way, is a violation of Facebook's terms of service. Anyway, so 2 weeks after we implemented that, or I should say I implemented that, we got a nice little notice.
DMCA notice?
From the ISP going, hey, this movie was downloaded. And I'm like, I got to looking at it and went, shit. So I locked it down. And it was like, you know, public networks are great for your customers, but then you got assholes that just come along and it's like, well, you know, I'm just sitting here waiting on my vehicle to get its oil changed. Let me see if I can download a movie somewhere that I'm not supposed to.
Yeah.
On this free Wi-Fi.
But if it don't work, then they get bad reviews. I mean, there's no Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Because these the corporations require certain... They this particular one, and I'm not going to name the dealership nor the brand, but they require a minimum of 75 megabit capacity to the public Wi-Fi. So they do they require
Seems
you have
reasonable,
it.
Reasonable, yeah.
I mean, but this was also like 5 years ago.
Hmm.
But not only do they require that you have public Wi-Fi, they require that you have at least 75 megabit. They've probably gone up now, but anyway.
Hmm.
But I mean, it's smart what you're doing. You basically carve it all out and say, you know, you're not getting on this internal network.
I'm not going to bother to inspect traffic. Yeah, that would be a good experiment. I just don't
trust
them.
Get AI to do it.
I'm not looking. We have the washer and dryer on the network for two reasons.
Mm.
One is, well, both are convenience. So we put a load in through the washer in a particular mode, delicates or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We take that load from the washer to the dryer and just hit the washer link. And it knows what was in the washer last. And so it tailors that mode for the dryer.
All right. So you don't use
delicates on the dryer.
You don't use the tweet function for it.
No.
There are some, literally, I remember this years ago, it was like your washing machine or your dryer can tweet and let you know that the load is done. And I'm like,
it's not a tweet, but it's through the app. Yeah. It'll let us know. And in the dryer, it'll let you know when it's done, but maybe you're not home or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can hit a button and go, keep fluffing it until I get there. So it's just my wife will hear a phone so she can yell at one of the kids to go swap the laundry over.
Mm-hmm. I mean, okay. those
are
nice
things.
Quality of life.
The app will keep track of your dryer sheets. You can tell how many you have left. And it'll... But she doesn't do it. And it keeps telling her you're out of dryer sheets. So she said, we have 999 dryer sheets.
So
it quits telling her we're out of dryer sheets.
So after 999 loads, it'll finally say you're out of dryer sheets again. And
but
she
until
just
then,
go,
it'll just keep its mouth shut.
Yeah, that's wild.
But I've not put the refrigerator on Wi-Fi because I can't think of any reason I need it to alert me distract me. I'll smell the milk. I'll tell you if it's bad. How about that?
Exactly. Exactly. I don't need my refrigerator. I know there are some refrigerators. I don't know if yours does this or not, but I know that there are some that can take stock of what's in the damn thing.
I don't think ours does that.
And I'm like, if I've fallen so far down the evolutionary ladder that I can't figure out the things that are almost done in my refrigerator, we have a list. We have this mini little clipboard on a magnet on our refrigerator. And we write down all the stuff we need for the groceries. Yeah. I finalize that list every Thursday morning on the Walmart app on my phone, and we go pick the shit up between 8 and 8:30 on Friday mornings. I don't need the refrigerator to do that for me.
Well, it would be nice if I'm standing in the store and go, shit, do we have garlic? Because you never really know. Like, I know now because I have seen it. But you're standing in the store and go, do I have garlic? It would be nice to just pull up, you know, a little snapshot image of what's in the fridge at that moment. You go, yep.
Oh, you're fancy. You're talking about fresh garlic, like a garlic clove.
The canned minced garlic in oil or
whatever. Oh, in the oil. Yeah, we always get dry. I get garlic powder.
We've got garlic powder.
Yeah.
We've done fresh garlic, but now we just like scoop a tablespoon of that stuff, and it works.
We have gone over to kind of full circle. We've gone back to garlic salt.
Oh, I have both. Yeah, we've got powder and salt.
We used to only do powder, but
I like garlic salt.
Oh well, what happened was is Tyler and Oriana, when Tyler was here last, they went and visited the grandparents, Lee's parents, because mine are dead, and I guess they had an Italian meal, and their grandma uses garlic salt, like on the toast and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And they come back, and Oriana is a bread fiend. She loves bread. She loves it whenever I make bread because I've got a bread machine.
Mm-hmm.
And I will do raisin cinnamon bread. And she come back, and she's like, I think we need to get some of that. And what happened was there was so many years there that we were trying to watch our, I'll say in air quotes loosely, watch our salt intake, that we always went with like just the powders.
Yeah.
And I said, no, okay. So we're now getting this, I forget the brand, but garlic salt. I am now a garlic salt-aholic. I put that shit on everything.
We add garlic to many, many things now.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I make the toast for, you know, lasagna or spaghetti.
Or spaghetti or whatever, yeah.
I used to use the Lowry's seasoned salt because it had garlic and onion and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But now it's just garlic salt.
Mm-hmm. I'm doing the same thing. I put it on the French fries. I cook French fries.
Yeah, that might work.
Yeah. I put it on French fries. We don't do it on the tater tots. And the reason for that is because, and I think I may have mentioned this to you before, we buy Great Value brand tater tots. They're already pre-seasoned.
Yeah, they're seasoned.
They are the, I don't know what it is. You can buy all these like Al-Rida and all of that other kind of, they fucking suck. Their tater tots suck. But you buy the Great Value. I use them as hash browns.
Yeah, I used to do that.
I mean, they are perfect. Anyway, I don't know how we got off on that, but so this killed me. San Francisco's Muni Metro Light Rail is undergoing a major $700 million modernization, including a $212 million contract with Hitachi Rail to eliminate its reliance on 5 1/4 inch floppy disks.
That sounds like a government contract. Yeah.
The outdated automatic train control system, ATCS, which relies on floppy disk and fragile loop cables, will be updated to improve efficiency and prevent system failure. Communication system will also be upgraded as the current setup has bandwidth equivalent to old dial-up internet.
So which floppies?
5 1/4.
5 1/4.
Yeah, 5.25. Not even the
wow.
The three. Three and a, what was it? Three and a half? Yeah,
three and a half. Yeah.
Not even the 3.5.
I remember when we kind of got moved towards 3.5 inch, people thought that was a hard drive because it was hard.
Hard plastic, yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Now, my first programming classes, we had to turn our work in on floppies, but it was 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't the, Nobody had a 5.25 drive.
3.5, 1.44
megabytes.
Megabytes.
Yeah. It was not enough room to hold the Hello World C++ project. All of the project files, you know, the source code and the object code and the executable, it couldn't hold all of that. So we had, I think we just turned in the executable on the floppy.
So you didn't provide any of the code or in the project files?
Maybe the code, maybe the CPP file and and the executable, but it could not, you couldn't compile it on the disk because the disk wasn't big enough. Or maybe that's right. You couldn't compile it on the disk because everything, but you would turn in your source code and the executable. Mm-hmm.
They should have been for, well, I forget, Tyler could probably remember, but you know, there was a way Microsoft had a special formatting technique that would actually format the standard 3.5, 1.44 to like 1.7 or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I know that you could get software on the 3.5s for installation that was bigger than 1.44.
Yeah, I think my uncle brought us Windows 95 one time, and it was on a stack.
13 disk is what I remember.
That's what I remember, it being 13.
Yep. First time I ever installed it, I think I borrowed it from a friend of mine, and it was 13, 3.5 floppy. It is funny calling them floppies because you could put out an eye with them, but.
Yeah. Well, if you break them open, they're floppy inside.
Yeah, they're floppy inside. Yeah. That's true.
I still have a case of floppies, like some of my dad's children's stories that he would read in church. And I've thought about getting those out and before I have no way to read them.
I think
I've got a USB floppy drive somewhere.
I was going to say, I think there's a USB floppy drive somewhere. It's probably in Tyler's room. Just like there's an external DVD reader. Might even be a DVD writer. I can't remember. Though I do have two laptops that actually have optical drives. That one right there. And then I've got a Lenovo down here that basically won't stay running. It was a refurb. I bought that one brand new in 2015 at Staples. And I've since replaced the drive. It came with a spindle drive. I've since put an SSD in it. I've replaced the battery once already. And I think there's something wrong with the charging circuit because the battery will not charge. Matter of fact, I'll come in and I'll turn that monitor, that TV on, and sometimes it'll actually have a low battery warning, and the damn thing is connected to power.
Yeah, well, that checks out.
So if you were to go over there and pull the power on, it'd probably die. And that battery is less than a year old. So speaking of batteries, and was that you or me? It doesn't matter. Microsoft will soon charge for Windows 10 updates as part of its extended security update ESU program. Businesses will face significant cost for these updates, while educational institutions will receive more favorable pricing. For the first time, consumers can also opt in, but specific conditions apply. This change is intended to support users who haven't yet upgraded to Windows 11, though the high fees might encourage more users to switch to new versions of Windows. Now, I got the answer. This is the year, 2025, of Linux desktop.
Ooh, yeah. Well, for most tasks these days, with everything being web-based, that's, you know, a little bit of user training.
That's true.
It's not out of the park, but, you know, my photography clients, no.
No.
They run Windows software for managing this and that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, this is going to be the year I sell 50 or 60 desktops.
Like brand new desktops or actual?
Oh, yeah, it'd be brand new.
Okay.
I don't, it probably won't be 50 or 60, but it will be a refresh summer.
I got you.
When school's out, they don't, you know, they're not shooting, they're not uploading and processing.
I'm curious, you don't have to get deep into this, but what kind of processing power does that require?
Turns out more than I thought.
I bet you could do it with a Mac Mini, but it was not Windows.
Well, I mean, I'd have to look at the software.
Yeah. I mean, if there are Mac versions of it, I bet you that especially that new M4 Mac Mini, even the base model.
Well, actually, they don't do a whole lot of processing. I mean, they do correction and a little bit of touch up, but I mean, it's almost like it's Lightroom presets. A lot of it is.
Well, I know Lightroom works on Mac.
Yeah.
So. It might be something to consider, but of course, then there's a learning curve of them having to learn a new ecosystem.
Well, they love all Macs, but
I'm telling you, it might. The thing is, I don't know what kind of storage requirements, but like the guy I was talking about that did the DaVinci thing, he wound up, because it's got Thunderbolt 5 on it,
mm-hmm.
he just wound up buying a 2 terabyte. He did something I wouldn't have done, but he bought an actual case and bought it like an M.2 or whatever. An NVMe, I'm sorry, I think is what he did, and put it in a case that connects via USB-C Thunderbolt. Yeah. You could also get like the Seagate T7s, T8s, or whatever those things are that are uber fast, and connect up to that if you needed the additional storage, because those ports are doing, what, 40, 80 gigabit or some shit like that? I mean, it's impressively fast.
That's local storage is not going to work.
Do they need it, or are you saying they got to have a lot?
Storage has to be on the network.
Okay. So so they're touching up photos and stuff, it being stored on the network?
Yeah.
But then it's not an issue. Because these, I mean, you could get by with the base 16 gig, 256 gig storage on the M4 minis, probably.
Yeah.
For 500.
Except for a few. The ones who actually use Photoshop and build, like, for the...
Yeah.
Banners for the sports teams and all that. They can't, they don't do that on the network. They pull it in the local, but for a lot of it, yeah, they could, they could do that.
I mean, it's
we've got 50 terabytes on the network and we're having to shuffle off because I've got a 20 or 25 terabyte volume because they want to hold, the current year and the previous 2 years for reprints. I can't hold the previous 2 years and the current year in a 25 terabyte volume.
So you have
because they are producing that much.
Wow.
And this is my smaller school photographer. I think they got new cameras. And so the images are bigger.
Oh yeah.
And they're not shooting in RAW. I don't know what I would do if they were shooting in RAW. I mean, they're shooting in JPEG, but it's nuts. 10 megapixel cameras.
Wow. Yeah, because I know iPhone support, what is it, HEIC or HIEC or whatever the hell it is.
HEIC.
I know they support that, but I don't know if any other like commercial cameras support that, because that is an Apple format.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, hell, even on my phone, I set it to JPEG because I've run into issues where I've needed the file and it's like, good fucking luck trying to pull it up on a Windows machine if you weren't smart enough to get the, codec or whatever years ago when it was free.
Yeah.
Because it's no longer free. You can get it from the store, but I think it's like $9, $10 or something to get it on the machine. So it's not worth it. But a recent study found OpenAI's AI powered transcription tool Whisper is prone to hallucinations where it invents inaccurate or even harmful text not present in the original speech. Whisper has been found to fabricate racial commentary, violent rhetoric, and even imaginary medical treatments. And despite these issues, the tool is widely used across industries, including in healthcare, where it transcribes patient consultations, although OpenAI has warned against its use in high-risk contexts. And on and on and on. So I do use Whisper. I use it locally on my Mac Mini to do transcriptions. Used to of like the podcast, but now that I don't know what Substack uses, but I just let Substack do it because it does it automatically. I've heard this on other podcasts. What the hell are you thinking letting it do medical transcriptions?
What did you expect when you train your model on the internet?
Jesus. I mean
it's just transcription. I mean, you're not asking it to make shit up. You're just going, make this speech into text. Don't add any context. Ignore the people in the background. I mean, don't summarize it. Just whatever this said.
If
put it in text.
If he said red, I need it to say the word red.
Yeah.
You know, hernia needs to be hernia.
Yeah.
Not some fantasy that he got the hernia with the chicks on the corner. I mean,
who knows? I mean, I wonder if they compared it. Racial slurs or racial stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they look there and they just listen to the audio from that point. How did it do that? I mean, was there somebody, was Fox News on in the background?
I don't know because most of the time, I mean, I've never actually been in the presence of a doctor that did this, but I know used to, they just have these tape recorders that they talk into mm-hmm. and then they'd hand it off and somebody at the office would have to transcribe that.
Yeah.
I know there are services and machines that do that now that they can sit there and talk into.
When I was in with my first shoulder surgery, I was in the Army, and I was talking with this Army surgeon, and he looked at my shoulder and did the little examination, and then he sat down in the room right there, picked up the phone, and just started talking.
Mm-hmm.
And just in this monotone sort of voice.
The dictaphone.
And that went into, I don't know if it went to a human or it was early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
But it went somewhere to be transcribed and entered into my record. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I've actually seen stuff like that. That's definitely the older technology. But yeah, I think it actually got stored somewhere on a server somewhere. And then somebody had to listen to it and actually type it out,
yeah,
transcribe it.
I don't know. Probably was pretty cheap, $1,200 a minute or something.
Yeah, cheap.
Government contract.
Government contract. That's it. This one bothered me. Inside the U.S. government bought tool that can track phones at abortion clinics. A surveillance tool by, I guess it's Babel Street, used by U.S. government agencies to track individual movements via smartphone location data, capable of monitoring visits to sensitive sites like abortion clinics, churches, and jury parking lots. Locate X, that's the name of the software, raises serious privacy concerns as it enables warrantless tracking of personal details like home addresses and frequently visited places. Lawmakers are pushing for regulation, such as the Fourth Amendment is Not for Sale Act, to ban warrantless location data purchases. However, comprehensive protections for reproductive health data remain stalled despite advocacy for bills like the My Body, My Data Act. Meanwhile, the Federal Trade Commission has targeted data brokers over sales of sensitive location data, though surveillance risks from tools like LocateX remain a pressing issue. Now that we're in this post-election world,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how any of this is going to play out because the FTC, I think that's Lena Khan, she's going to be fired. You know, she's been a bulldog on stuff like this, but all of that's going out the window. And yeah, that's getting political because that directly connects into this kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, it doesn't affect my customers, but it does affect the public. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it could very well affect people in your life, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm against tracking for any reason.
Yeah.
Unless explicit consent is given.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
I mean, I'm also one of those people who's like, I got nothing to hide. But with the advent of people just making shit up, drawing their own conclusions based on what they see,
mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want them thinking that I know where Atlantis is and I'm keeping it from the public.
But you are.
Based on my movements.
But you do.
If you say so. And now that you've said that, it's going to be transcribed and on the internet. And become truth.
You might as well just go ahead and sign up for Truth Social. Get on there.
No, I have no interest in that.
Yeah,
unless me either. Unless he's got an AI model that's making progress.
Nothing
useful.
No, that place.
I can only guess as to what kind of fuckery's going on there.
Yeah,
but I'm not going to make any assumptions.
That whole thing is based on, it's a Mastodon install. They basically modified open source Mastodon. That's what Truth Social actually
is. Oh, it's
a
fork?
Yep. It is a fork, and they got in trouble because it's up under the license, whichever one it is, that mm-hmm. you're supposed to contribute that back to the community.
Yeah.
And they didn't until they got called on it. And then they were like, oh, our bad here. So yeah, it's a Mastodon fork.
One of the Y Combinator projects that
mm-hmm.
I guess got funded. It's called Pearl AI. It's a it's a fork of VS Code, which is I didn't dig into
mm-hmm.
it, but he got shit on Twitter a lot because whoever it was, I think it was the Apache folks,
mm-hmm.
because whatever they forked from was released under the Apache license, and so their license didn't match the same and Apache or whoever it was called him out on it.
Mm-hmm.
And his response was, dude, I chat GPT'd the license. I don't have time to deal with this. We got to build. And I was like, whoa, this.
Wow.
He just outright admitted that he didn't bother with this and they just shit on him for weeks. But yeah, he forked it and didn't keep the same licensing.
Wow.
The same as whoever helped out with Fork and Mastodon. But that, yeah, I don't know. The tracking.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be some data leaks. There always is.
Right.
But if you're that petty to track somebody from home to an abortion clinic,
mm-hmm.
then fuck you.
I don't think I'm less concerned about the pettiness and more concerned about government overreach.
Well, that's the thing. If the government is that petty,
well, okay,
to track you from the state where it's not allowed to a state where it is allowed, because I can fly to Colorado and smoke as much weed as I care to.
Right.
When I get back to Georgia, fuck them. they don't have to know.
Yeah.
It was legal where I did it. So, yeah, that's my stance on it.
You know, you brought up that sparked a memory. I don't know if you've ever watched Blue Bloods.
No, don't think so.
Several seasons back, this is probably because I think it's in the 14th season. It's actually finally ending. But in the probably somewhere in the first 5 to 7 seasons, they had a scenario where one of their higher ranking officials got drug tested for whatever reason. I don't know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And he had marijuana in his system. And the thing is the commissioner had to make a decision on the fact that the guy went to a state. Matter of fact, I think it was Colorado.
Yeah.
Went to Colorado for the weekend,
mm-hmm.
partook, came back, did not partake when he was in New York.
Right.
But because he tested positive, the commissioner had to figure out, did this violate the policy? And I think it wound up firing him for it, which he fought against it. But
I think, I know if I go work at the hospital, I've got to say that I don't use tobacco products.
Yeah.
And I'm subject to testing for nicotine, which is fucking ridiculous, which is why I never even filled out an application.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was my thing. If I agreed to that and you hold me to it, that's, you know, it's on me.
Yeah.
I was in the Army. I was in Colorado before it was legal.
Right.
Of course, it was never going to be legal as a member of the United States Army.
I was going to say, not on the military base.
But I drove down to Albuquerque, where it wasn't legal in either, because this was 1999.
Mm-hmm.
Went to a Rob Zombie concert with a friend, and I happened to be next to people who were partaking of the ganja. I smelled it, and I was like, oh, shit. And so when I got back to the barracks, I asked my roommate, who is known to partake.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, am I going to get in huge trouble if they wake us up tomorrow with an urinalysis for everybody? And he's like, do you smoke anything? I was like, no, but I was next to it. And you know, I got the secondhand.
Secondhand, he
laughed at me. We never got tested. But I mean, yeah, we never got tested. I never got anything like that.
That's hilarious.
And luckily, I think it was that same trip to Albuquerque, ended up at a college party. And I think the friend I went with, he's like, don't eat the brownies. I was like, okay. Now I probably would have, I would have been paranoid to no end if I had, because I'd never experienced, I never had experience of THC until I was in my 40s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I would have been scared, but I think I would have enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I've had it 2 times in my life, and both times it was a pleasant experience. And, but since then, I mean, and those were back whenever I was in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, the only thing I've had that's come close to it has been Delta 8s and Delta 9s. And,
I'm convinced that that's the way to do it.
The Delta 8s.
Instead of, smoking weed.
Yeah.
The the tinctures or the atomizers or the gummies, the edibles, way better. I mean, I can only imagine. I've still never smoked weed, but I can only imagine.
Yeah.
That doesn't smell good to me.
No. I can tell you that. See, there was a while there I was buying a container of gummies easily every 3 to 4 weeks because I was taking one every night just to sleep.
Right.
And I started building up a tolerance. Mm-hmm. So I had to back off. And then they came out with the Delta 9s. And I got a bottle of that. I still have the Delta 9s because whenever the one or two times I tried those, no, sir. I don't know what the hell, but but no. I did not sleep well. I did not pass go. It was,
I got some at the local drugstore here in Tifton, and I've been using the stuff that I ordered from, I thought it was California, but it's Texas.
Mm-hmm. weird place. Okay.
Anyway, one of those, I lost my fucking mind.
Mm.
I can't remember what, I think it might be Delta 9, but it's either indica or a sativa. And I lost my fucking mind. I still have them.
Yeah.
I'll have to bring you a few of those and just take half of one,
mm-hmm.
maybe a quarter.
Now, there aren't any in this. There's actually screws in this. Mm-hmm. But it's a company called Binoid.
I've never heard of it.
And premium Delta 8 green apple candy gummies. It's 500 milligram. When I first started getting them, I was getting the variety pack where it'd be like apple and strawberry and stuff. Mm-hmm. I found out I love the apple.
The green apple sounds tasty.
But yeah, when I got one of these one time and I went, you know what? This makes a good screw holder and what have you. Yeah. So, but yeah, these were costing me about $35 a bottle, something like that. I actually got on a subscription with them to cut it down to about $29 or something like that. So I was like, yeah, just start sending it to me every 3 weeks. Because I was literally chewing one every night. And whenever I was drinking.
Oh, yeah.
There were nights where I would chew one of these after I'd already had several drinks. You know, and that was some of the best sleep I'd ever had in my life.
My daughter told me there's a word for that. It's called crossed.
Crossed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it. I don't actually use it. I really don't drink much anymore. But yeah, if you have if you're drinking alcohol and you are using THC, it's mm-hmm. called crossed.
Oh man, yeah. These words. These damn Zoomers. Mm. She's a Zoomer, right? Gen Z?
I don't know. I don't put people in categories.
Well, you should. It's fun.
She's 19.
Well, if her birthday is after 1996, but before 2012.
Yeah.
She's a Zoomer. Because I think that's the cutoff is 2012, and then the 2012s are Gen Alpha.
I saw a tweet today that put a 15-year-old in Gen Alpha.
I could be wrong.
2009.
Okay, I could be wrong about the 2012.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't put people in boxes like that, though.
I do just because it's fun, and because
it is fun. I bitch about millennials.
I cling on to the fact that I'm an elder Gen Xer, and
elder Gen Xer. I guess I'm a.
Well, that's
younger Gen Xer.
That's because I was born in 70 and the Gen X starts at 65.
Mm.
So, and if there's a lot, there's been a resurgence or not really a resurgence. There's been a surge, if you will, of social media personalities like the Slim Sherry and the professor, or I think that's his name, of embracing Gen X, a lot of TikTok videos that tickle the shit out of me. It's like, you don't fuck with Gen Xers and here's why. And these are not Gen Xers saying this. These are millennials saying, this is the reason why you don't fuck with Gen Xers. And it goes through all of this stuff about how we were raised and, you know, we fought bears and we did this. I mean, being a little facetious.
Well,
but
we didn't wear bicycle helmets.
We didn't wear bicycle helmets. We were the latchkey kids. I was not one of them, but our generation were the latchkey kids
mm-hmm.
because we were the first generation where dual income was starting to become a thing.
Yeah.
And so our parents weren't home whenever we would get home, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Again, I wasn't one of those because my mom had a debilitating disease and could not work. But that's the reason why I look at it like that, because there is a generational divide in the way these generations act and the things they say. And language is one of those things. And I get all bent out of shape when words that meant one thing, it was like the whole raw dogging thing. I was like, that's not what that means. And my daughter's like, she'll irritate me sometimes when she'll say this, but she's like, language changes. I'm like, but it shouldn't, because this word means this and it should never mean anything else. And well, that's the fucking hill I'm going to die on.
Well, I mean, I've never gotten your definition of raw dogging.
Raw dogging is sex without a condom.
Yeah. So my thing is, it can be applied in different ways. Like, I saw a tweet. Some guy sat down at a Linux terminal and wrote a USB driver without a manual. He was just like raw dogging terminal and VI to write this driver. I was like, okay, well, that's kind of...
But that's not what that means.
I mean, he didn't have any protection on, so...
But that's not what that means.
I know.
I mean, the idea of...
It's a funny way to...
I know, but the put it. I don't... I guess what gets me, and, you know, I don't really care. It's just one of those things that I like to pick on, is the fact that...
I mean...
How do you get from sex without a condom to I'm going on a flight and I'm not going to have any media or anything. I'm not going to watch. I'm not going to listen to nothing. I'm just going to sit in my seat and be one with the plane. These two things do not connect.
Oh, raw dogging a flight?
Well, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
That's what raw, that's the terminology they're using now is when
bare and gritty and dirty. That's,
yeah. I guess.
It's not the modern way.
I'm going bare. I mean, so you're not taking your phone or you're not listening. Okay. Where did raw? Okay. Whatever. I'm moving on. Let's talk about atomics. I mean, nuclear.
Nuclear. What now?
Amazon, Meta, and Microsoft are increasingly exploring nuclear power to address rising energy demands from AI and cloud computing. We've talked about this with Microsoft doing their Three Mile Island thing.
Right.
Meta and Amazon recently encountered regulatory setbacks. Meta's plan for an AI data center near a nuclear plant was halted due to the presence of a rare bee species, which, after last Tuesday, won't be an issue, I'm certain. While Amazon's hyperscale data center project near Pennsylvania's Susquehanna, I guess that's how you say that, was blocked by FERC, F-E-R-C, over concerns about grid stability and cost impacts on other customers. Despite these challenges, Microsoft's plan to revive the Three Mile Island reactor is progressing. Both Google and Amazon have committed to future nuclear power sources, including advanced small modular reactors, known as SMRs, for long-term low-carbon energy solutions. The reason why I said that after last week's election, the B thing probably won't be an issue.
Probably not.
Because that administration won't give a shit about the bees.
Well,
they're gutting the EPA.
Yeah, I mean, they're gutting a lot of stuff. Yeah, I'm not going to say what will or won't happen, but it seems more likely to get passed.
See, I like to prognosticate.
I don't.
I do.
Yeah.
Because I'm generally right.
I saw 50% of the country swear they knew what was going to happen last week. And then all of a sudden, it fucking didn't at all.
That is fair. That is very, very fair.
I saw plenty of people on both sides just happy as shit. Or no, well, I guess some Fox News, they were kind of, they were ready for to announce defeat. And then, yeah, it was nuts. So I'm never going to say what will or won't happen. I'm just saying, that's...
You made me think.
Seems more likely now to get past.
I had that client, old friend of mine that I... He wanted me to update all this stuff at his house. And that was last Wednesday. So I get to his house and I walk in. He's got Fox News on. And he looks at me and goes, "Well, are you happy?" And I said, "About what?" And then I looked at Fox News and I said, "I do not talk politics with friends or clients. It's best that way." He goes, "Oh, okay." We touched on one thing briefly. Mm-hmm. And then I said, "That's all I'm saying about that. I'm backing away." because I've discovered you and I will, we banter.
Yeah.
But
we know better than to ruin a friendship over some dumb shit.
Oh yeah. And to be fair, I think politically we're probably aligned similarly on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
I get my news from Twitter, but I have enough sense to know what to believe yeah. and what to question.
Yeah. Yours is more of, I view you as someone who uses Twitter more for as an academic exercise to just see the.
It is. It's yeah. more entertainment because my wife, well, she's been home all week and yeah. she doesn't like it when I watch TV. And when her mother's in the guest room where I've just moved the TV to.
Oh.
So I can't watch TV.
Hmm.
And I'm not watching TV on my phone. And my chair in my office is only so comfortable.
Yeah.
So yeah, Twitter is my entertainment.
Damn.
Especially now that I know I can get in fights.
I mean, bravo.
Well, and speaking of modern language, I just wish some people knew where the fucking shift key was and to put a period at the end of a sentence. And maybe a comma. Just as a little flair.
Wait a minute. Don't you know that putting periods at the end of sentences is a microaggression?
To whom? To whom it matters not. If you omit a period, it's an insult to me because you couldn't bother.
It's the same.
But do I go on the news and cry about it?
No. It's the same bullshit of in texting, just doing a thumbs up. If you do a thumbs,
I do that shit all the time.
If you do a thumbs up to a Zoomer, you have just insulted them.
I do it all the time to both of my kids.
I do too. I don't give a fuck. You know, I am still, I don't know where this podcast is going. I am still the guy that when I type and I put a period, I put two spaces after the period.
Oh yeah.
Because you know what? I was trained that way.
I let my phone do it. When I'm finished with a sentence, I just double tap the space and it adds a period and puts two spaces after.
Yeah. But
it knows that that's the right way to do it.
That is the right way to do it. But do you realize that for several years now, that is considered the wrong way to do it? You should only put one space after a period. And I'm like, no, you are wrong. That I will, again, this is the hill I shall die on. I will put two spaces after the period.
They can change all that shit after I'm dead.
Exactly. Let's don't even get into the there, and there.
Oh, and 222.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so hijackers. Well, they might as well. Hackers hijack over 16,000 TP-Link network devices, creating a big old botnet that's absolutely slamming Microsoft's Azure accounts. So,
Oh, shit. Now that you said that. I mean, I read the thing, the headline.
Yeah.
I knew we were going to be talking about this. I've just realized I think I've got a TP-Link router. I don't manage it.
Yeah.
I'm not paid to manage it.
Mm-hmm.
He just wanted it working. And now he...
I try not... I use TP-Link switches as a cost-saving maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
I like them. They work. They do the job.
Yeah.
Their layer 3 switches are fine. I still prefer Ubiquiti. After I put in that 16-port PoE Pro for the client that's mm-hmm. got the 4 2.5 gig PoE Plus ports on it, the remainder of the ports are standard 1 gig PoE Plus, has two SFP ports.
Mm-hmm.
I got to have me one of those switches because it would replace two switches I have in the house.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't have the spare $500 that it cost. But TP-Link, for the longest time, we used a TP-Link Wi-Fi router here, but I never used it as an actual router. I cannot stand using Wi-Fi routers. I will
the built-in, yeah.
I will hang it onto the network, and it can be an access point.
Yeah,
and I will put in an actual real firewall.
Yeah,
cannot stand those damn things. But their wireless devices are fairly good, but they turned them into a botnet named Quad7, which is conducting massive password spray attacks on Microsoft Azure accounts. The botnet attributed to hackers allegedly linked to the Chinese government, surprise, sends large volumes of login attempts from diverse IPs to breach Azure's cloud services. Microsoft reports that compromised accounts are then exploited to move laterally within networks, extracting more data and potentially installing remote access trojans for future access. It is active globally with high infection rates in Bulgaria, Russia, the U.S., and Ukraine. It poses significant challenges for tracking due to its dispersed nature. And while the exact infection method is unclear, rebooting TP-Link devices may temporarily remove the malware, though hackers can re-access through vulnerable backdoors. The attack highlights ongoing security risks for cloud services and the importance of maintaining device hygiene, especially for frequently targeted network equipment. And see, that's another problem. I'm wondering if they're talking about consumer grade, like we're talking about TP-Link Wi-Fi routers, because you know the average consumer never updates those things.
Yeah. It's working.
Yeah.
Shit stays in the closet.
Yeah. I mean, think about the fact that up until a few years ago, they all had default passwords of, you know, admin and whatever. I mean, the notorious Linksys routers. And of course, now it's required by law, I think. Rule
is that
or
why
whatever.
They changed it?
Yeah, it was a requirement.
I thought it was for reputation.
No. So now, you know, you have to look on the bottom of it. This is a username and password. They're all.
Yeah.
They're still recommended to change them.
What's funny is I just put in a Xerox multifunction copier. And I was accessing it remotely. And I was like, oh, shit. What's the default username and password?
Mm-hmm.
It's admin, and then the initial password is the serial number. I was like, oh, shit. But it turns out right there on another page before you log in is the serial number.
So I
just copied
good.
The serial number
and
logged into it.
Yeah, I've run into a lot of the newer Canons. Even the brothers are doing this now. I have to make sure that I look on the back of the label and I take a picture of the label because that's where the password is. It's not the serial number on those. Mm. Now, a lot of Canons is just admin and what is it? 7654321 to get into the admin side of it.
Yeah, all of the Canon copiers that are leased that I...
Yeah.
I'm so glad though, because I don't have to call the, the office supply company.
Exactly.
And then it was Xerox used to be just 1111.
That's secure.
In some of the printers that I managed down in the manufacturing district, it was just 1111.
I've never had to deal with Xerox copiers or printers.
Those things, I mean, I don't like HP anymore because they want you to sign up and start an HP account.
Yep.
Nope.
I hate HP.
And my experience with the Xerox machines there was great. So that's what I recommended. And that for a color multifunction thing.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid fast.
Price wise, how do they compare?
Oh, it's like terrible.
Oh, okay.
$1,800.
Oh, God.
But it's fucking fast.
Yeah. I usually gravitate over to small form factor Canons, not like the big copiers, but the small print like that. I've got one over there. When I bought that one, they were going for $99. It's just a basic monochrome, 22 page per minute. It's fast. It was $99. Within a year, damn things were $200. I think they underpriced them. But most of the time, that's what I go with, some model of a Canon.
This Xerox, it's the VersaLink C415. And if I remember correctly, color up to 40 a minute, 40 pages a minute.
Wow.
Or more.
That's fast.
42 maybe.
Yeah.
And it's like first page out in 7 seconds.
Sheesh.
It's
because it has a warm up and then
it's not like my HP color. It's slow going. I never use it anyway.
Yeah,
but you know it's pricey and the toner. I got him a set of toners with it.
Mm-hmm.
The colors are about $200 a piece for the high capacity, and the black was about $180. but
that's what it is.
They kept complaining we're like the redheaded stepchildren of the organization over here. So, and I was like, well, now you're not.
Yeah. Now you're number one.
Yep.
Numero uno.
You might have wanted to lease a color machine, but whatever.
Yeah. I much prefer whenever my clients actually lease their copiers and what have you, because then I don't have to screw with them at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I will.
All I got to do is, you know, put in drivers when we replace a machine. That's it.
Yeah. I'll help out. I'll go in and, you know, if I can, I'll put like whenever they're doing scan to email, I'll put in the email addresses in the address book for them, stuff like that. But beyond that, I'm like, no, it's not doing. Yep. Call the leasing company. So I got two stories here. One, OpenAI search engine is now live in ChatGPT. That was a couple of weeks ago. And then there was one over at Tom's Guide. I just tested Google versus ChatGPT search, and I'm shocked by the results. So basically, I just did a summary about that because I thought it was cool. So a recent comparison highlights ChatGPT search as a strong alternative to Google, especially for users valuing privacy and direct answers. ChatGPT provides a conversational, ad-free experience with summarized real-time information that reduces the need for multiple clicks, unlike Google's ad-supported and sometimes cluttered interface. The key findings included speed. Both are fast. ChatGPT's friendly format is more welcoming. 2, accuracy and directness. ChatGPT delivers concise answers with sources, while Google often requires browsing multiple links. 3, real-time updates and news. ChatGPT provides straightforward answers, especially useful for live information like stock prices. 4, privacy. ChatGPT's ad-free approach offers a cleaner, less intrusive experience. And 5, overall user experience. ChatGPT's design feels more organized and user-centric. Additionally, OpenAI launched their live chat search feature for ChatGPT paid users accessing Microsoft's Bing for real-time data and free. With free and enterprise access coming soon, OpenAI is partnering with media groups to support accurate election-related information, which, you know, we're past that now.
It comes around every so often.
Yeah, I mean, I hear it. Well, it used to. But anyway.
Well, I can tell you that next election will be a lot different because Trump won't be on the ticket.
Yeah, well, that's true.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
Trump won't be on the ticket. Nobody's up for re-election in that particular sense, unless Vance runs, but that's
down
way far in the future.
Yeah.
So it's going to look a lot different. And so it's still going to be looked over. It's going to be under the microscope.
I mean, hell, we won't even know what version of ChatGPT we'll have at that point, or if it's, you know, imploded on itself and hallucinated or what have you.
Yeah.
How have you really tested it? I mean, like I said, Tom's guy, he went through and every test that he did, ChatGPT was the winner against Google.
Oh, I believe it, because ChatGPT is not, their revenue is not driven from advertising.
Advertising, yeah.
The reason you got to click 17 times to read one article in a newspaper is so that it can reload the ads.
Yeah.
And then sneak one right under your mouse just before you click read more.
Read more, yeah. I haven't really put it through its paces. I've done some preliminary, like, cursory searches with it now, but
I've just used it when I needed to use it.
Yeah.
And I click the web search button when I want something that's current.
Yeah.
I'm not looking to look up a command syntax or have it write code. If I need something that's current, like who won the game the other night, I'll just click the web button. And so far it's done very well, but I don't get paid to compare that shit. I just need the answer.
I was going to log. I got to log back in. I was going to see what it could tell me real quick. Okay. What is the current presidential popular vote?
Count.
See what it says. Searching the web. Oh, nice. Oh, and I do like the fact that it gives you the sources that it finds this information.
Yeah.
So it came back and said, as of November 13th, 2024, the most votes counted, President-elect Donald Trump has secured approximately 74.65 million votes, surpassing his 2020 total of 74.22 million. Vice President Kamala Harris has received about 70.9 million votes. This marks the first time since 2004 that a Republican candidate has won the popular vote. And the Electoral College is 312 to 226, which I've got a tab pulled up on another website over there on my main machine that I've been tracking it, because they still haven't tallied, I think, all the votes in California as of today.
Yeah, last I read, they were like 70%.
Yeah. But those sources were, As for the most complete and up-to-date information about the U.S. election, please visit news sources like the Associated Press, Reuters, or check with your state or local election authority.
Or you could look on Twitter.
Or you could look, you know.
See who's cheating.
Go Ben's route and see who's who's cheating on there. It's kind of cool. I'll probably start using it more and more. I keep forgetting to use it. I just default to, I'm in a browser. I just type shit in my address bar.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's a way for me. Is there a way to make that your default search in any of these browsers?
That would be cool. I just keep a ChatGPT tab open and stay logged in.
I have it as an app. So like a web app. So it's completely separate in its own little window.
Yeah. My documentation system had that feature. Now that I started using Edge.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think of that. But I've got one chat that I've just keep running,
yeah.
And it's called General Inquiries,
because
I don't want it to, I want it to stay in context when I'm talking about something.
It's memory.
But for just these general things, run-of-the-mill things, I don't want to have a whole conversation about it. It's quick questions.
Yeah.
I keep that chat pretty high up at the top anyway.
That's kind of cool.
But for everything else, it's separate. It's a separate conversation, so I can go back to it and continue that line of questions.
Fun times, man.
Yeah.
So the last story, I had to throw this one in because I've got a direct connection to it, and you do too somewhat, but I don't think when you were there, we were doing cable cards, but Howard Stern and other TiVo, I hadn't heard TiVo in a long time. I didn't even know that it was still a thing. Users were impacted by Optimum's, I guess that's a cable company, recent decision to end support for cable card technology, which allows encrypted cable channels to be viewed on third-party devices like TiVo. Optimum, part of Altice USA, attributed the decision to technical limitations related to the aging power key encryption system from Scientific Atlanta, which, by the way, has been owned by Cisco for over a decade and a half now.
Are they using 5 1/4 floppies or some shit? What's aging about it?
I don't know. Because I remember we had a dedicated piece of hardware in the head end for the power key that encrypted the channels. I remember Walt had to deal with that shit.
This is more like a licensing issue, isn't it? Probably for the...
It could
be. From what I read in the summary
could
there.
Could be, yeah. It's set to experience memory issues due to a timing mechanism flaw in November 2024. This end of support for cable card aligns with a broader industry shift towards streaming alternatives as FCC no longer mandates cable companies to offer cable card options. At the time, it was cool technology because... For people that don't understand the way that industry worked, is when you went to digital channels, you got a box, mm-hmm. just like you got the old analog boxes, but this was all digital, so you got more channels. And these boxes were proprietary, meaning that at the time, there was really only two major companies that did these boxes, Scientific Atlanta and Motorola.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were doing Motorola boxes, then you had to have the Motorola, basically, server equipment in your head in.
Yeah.
If you were doing Scientific Atlanta, then you would have that. And I forget what that damn thing was called. It started with a D. It was something. Anyway, it was actually a big, what was the name of that company? It used to make, I'm just drawing a blank. They made Unix servers, but they had their own system.
Sun Microsystems?
Sun Microsystems. Thank you. It was a Sun box. Because their operating system was Solaris, right?
Yeah. Which is now Oracle.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, you had, for Scientific Atlanta, it was that.
Mm-hmm.
Then cable card came along, and that allowed third-party manufacturers to build boxes, and it was like, you remember the cards that would go in like your Dish Network or your DirecTV boxes?
I'm familiar with them.
It was very similar to that. So instead of the box itself getting authorized to have the programming, the card got authorized. So you could buy, instead of buying a Scientific Atlanta a DVR that costs $600, you might could get a third-party box that they were selling for like maybe $400.
Mm-hmm.
And all you had to do was get the cable card, which you could get the cable card for maybe like $50, $75, or $100. There was a pricing benefit there.
Yeah.
And so as long as it was a cable card standard, The box took the cable card. You authorized the card. You were good. That's how the TiVos wound up working. Because as far as I know, there was never a Scientific Atlanta version of a TiVo. We right. had a couple of TiVos on our system, and they used a cable card. We did not use a lot of cable cards. And the funny thing is once this went into effect, after about a year, the boxes that we got from Scientific Atlanta / Cisco actually came. They were their regular boxes, but they had the slot for the cable card, and they came with the cable cards. That's how they did it.
Hmm.
So I just thought that was funny. It was like Howard Stern was frustrated. He did this on his show, lamenting the potential end of TiVo due to the loss of the cable card functionality.
What's he got to do with it?
I mean, he's so old school that this is how he DVR'd his program.
Oh, he's mad because his TiVo's not going to work?
Correct.
Oh.
That's the reason why he's mad. And so
my first question is, who cares?
Because he brought it up on his show. And okay. I thought it was interesting because of the fact that I sent this article to Tyler. And Tyler and I both were like, cable card still a thing? So, yeah.
Not in my house.
Yeah, not in my house. Everything's streaming here, baby. Over symmetrical fiber.
And I can't get the CW. Damn it.
Damn it. On Fubo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, that's it. I think we've sat here long enough.
I mean, we got more stories we could cover, but well, that's probably enough.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I'm getting hungry and my ass is going to sleep. So
my people are probably back home by now.
Okay, well, this is where we're going to wrap it up. I would like to point out that if you'd like some of our specific membership benefits, such as what I call the SGN After Dark. That's where I take some of the stuff that it does not go into the main show, and it drops, I think, 7 days. No, it drops the same day that this drops for members, and then 7 days later, it goes into the main feed. If you have any questions or comments, you can email podcast@southgeeknews.com. You can call and leave a voicemail or send a text at 229-234-1307. So Ben and I have talked about it. I think we're going to do another episode next week. Probably, hopefully, will be a little shorter because we won't have as many stories. And the reason for that is because our 2-week interval, because we had to shift from last week, would wind up the day before Thanksgiving, and Ben's not going to be here.
Yeah, so we'll just do it next week.
We'll do it next week.
Back on the, so I don't have to edit my calendar item.
I know that's wow.
My thumbs just can't handle it.
Okay, that's it. Bye, y'all. This has been a production of Tifton Media Works. Check out all our podcasts by visiting tiftonmediaworks.com.